fingers to brush back a few strands of her hair. He gently sucked on the sensitive skin of the nape of her neck, and then opened his mouth wide, preparing his fangs. Ahem. Ryoko's voice shattered the reverie they'd both been pulled into.
Ms. White? Mr. Masterson? I was just about to start dinner and wanted to run a few things by you.
Katie leapt to her feet, pushing Jack back with one hand and clutching her chest with the other. She took a slow breath before clearing her throat and turning to face Ryoko.
I can't stay, said Katie. I was just stopping by to check up on Jack.
Ryoko smiled and bowed slightly. The fact that her demeanor was so professional and non-judgmental made Jack feel even worse about the situation. He'd kissed Katie, and this time, he couldn't blame it entirely on the emotions of his bloodthirst. He had made the decision and let himself do it. He'd put her in an impossible position, and now they would both suffer for it.
I should go, said Katie.
Hold on, said Jack. Can we talk for a minute?
I'm sure if you need anything, Ryoko will be able to handle it, said Katie. She's here for a reason.
Jack frowned, but he could tell that there wasn't anything he could say to sway her. Katie adjusted her sweater and then headed for the door.
Sir? Asked Ryoko. Was there something in particular that Ms. White was alluding to?
What? No, of course not. Jack took a deep breath, trying to ignore the growing itchiness of his throat. The setting sun filled the mansion's windows with a deep orange glow. It was going to be a long night. Chapter 23. Ryoko did not hold back when it came to making dinner, even though it was just Jack that she was cooking for. He spent the interim between when Katie left and when the food was served, playing a game on his phone and sipping red wine. He knew that he would have to feed before the night was through. His bloodthirst was manageable, but with each moment that passed, he felt it growing slightly more distracting. He was careful to keep from getting too close to Ryoko when she finally called him to dinner and struggled to avoid staring at the way her maid uniform emphasized the lines of her neck.
I hope you enjoy it, sir, she said. I haven't been able to cook many proper meals for you since you arrived.
It looks fantastic, Ryoko, said Jack, admiring the plating of the steak, salad, and potatoes. Thank you. Ryoko bowed and started to leave the dining room. You're not hungry? Jack called after her. She frowned and gave a small shake of her head.
I usually take my meal at the breakfast nook in the kitchen. It isn't appropriate for the serving staff to eat with their employers.
It's just me and you here, Ryoko, said Jack. You don't have to stand on ceremony. Come on, take a seat. Ryoko hesitated and then bowed again, setting her own plate down on the table across from him. Jack was glad for the company, even though they ate in silence for most of the meal. He wanted her to eventually start to feel more comfortable around him. He hated Katie's idea of him biting Ryoko and drinking her blood against her will. What if he instead told her the truth about what had happened to him and let her decide for herself? He only considered the idea for a second before deciding that it was more than a little ridiculous. Even if she believed him, it would be asking for way too much from someone who he still barely knew. The food tasted fantastic, but it didn't sate Jack. He tried not to stare too much at Ryoko during the meal and took a deep sip of his wine each time he started to feel the compulsion. He complimented the food, made small talk about what she had planned for the menu for the rest of the week, and maintained a deliberate effort to act normal. The mansion's phone rang right as the meal came to an end. Ryoko paused in the middle of cleaning the table to hurry into the lounge to answer it. She called out to him a few seconds later.
It's Mayor Stinson, sir, said Ryoko.
Thanks, said Jack. He took the phone from her and brought it to his ear. Hello?
Jack, Dave Stinson here, said Dave. I hope I didn't interrupt your dinner. I'm afraid I've called with some news that you aren't going to enjoy hearing.
Jack felt a chill run through his blood as he considered the various possible bad outcomes that opening could lead to. I'm listening, he said.
A friend of mine called my office last night, said Dave. Said that she was almost mugged by a couple of the local riffraff. Her retelling of events was a little weird, but she described you almost perfectly, even down to the clothes you were wearing for our meeting.
Ah, said Jack. He winced. How much had the girls seen of him and Mira? Had they used their blood magic in front of her? Had she seen Mira drinking the blood of one of the muggers?
I can't thank you enough for being the good citizen and stepping in, said Dave. The thing is, I haven't been able to get in touch with the woman in question. She left a message on my office's answering machine, but she wasn't at the address she gave, and she didn't show at her job today. I spoke to the sheriff this afternoon, of course, but we've had no luck locating her so far. Jack frowned, trying to work out the most likely outcome. Had Mira followed up on the girl and decided to enthrall or kill her? It seemed unlikely that she would have let her escape in the first place, if that was what she had planned. But the muggers, on the other hand, the ones she'd been about to report to the sheriff, what would they have been willing to do to avoid jail time? I haven't seen or heard anything, said Jack. I only stepped in to break up what I thought was a fight. The girl ran off immediately after. He let out a slow, heart-wrenching sigh. He'd been the one who'd allowed the muggers to get away. Mira's idea would have taken care of them, but Jack had refused to consider it. He was responsible for this outcome.
Well, if you hear anything new, give me or the sheriff a call, said Dave. I know I've been dropping a lot on your shoulders, and I apologize for it. It's the kind of stuff your grandfather used to look into for the town.
Yeah, he said. Well, I guess someone has to keep the ball rolling. He said goodbye to the mayor and hung up. Ryoko was watching him from her seat across the table, her brow furrowed in worry.
Mr. Masterson, she said, would you like me to put your plate in the fridge for later?
Jack nodded. That would be great. I might be out for a while. You don't have to wait up for me. He felt a little bad about heading out at night after his conversation with Katie, but technically he wasn't breaking the promise he'd made to her. She'd asked him not to go looking for Mira, and this was another matter completely. Jack stopped by his room to pull on his grandfather's leather duster and headed out into the dark. It was still early in the night, but he had a sense of where he needed to be and what he needed to be doing. He jogged down the slope and into Lessertown, slowing his pace to keep from attracting too much attention to himself as he reached the streetlights. The few people out were mostly congregated around the entrances of the town's bars. Jack ignored them, instead heading down an alleyway and around the back of a building close to where the mugging had taken place. He silently climbed up the fire escape and found an inconspicuous spot to set up his stakeout. He planned on finding one or both of the muggers, and it seemed as though the easiest way to do it would be to wait for them to return to the place of the crime. From above, it was easy to get a good look at people without the same being true in return. Jack waited patiently, distracted only by the slow, building compulsion of his bloodthirst. He took slow breaths and used the guilt he felt over the disappearance of the woman he thought he'd saved motivate him to see his vigil through. It was past midnight when Jack finally spotted one of the muggers. It was the woman from the night before, dressed in jeans and the same dirty flannel shirt she'd had on the night before. Jack had trouble recognizing her at first, but she gave herself away, hovering at the mouth of an alleyway and pulling out a switchblade to toy with while she waited for her next victim. He forced himself to stay patient. The female mugger waited for a while, but nobody stumbled into her trap. She seemed to give up for the night after about half an hour and started down the street with her hands in her pockets. If she noticed that Jack was following her, she didn't make it obvious. He did his best to blend into the shadows, leaving 100 yards or so between them. He followed the woman to the outskirts of town, where every other house was abandoned or at least in a state of disrepair. The woman pulled keys out of her pocket and unlocked the door of a rectangular, single-story dwelling. Jack waited until she disappeared inside and then considered his next move. The neighborhood was silent, but the emptiness of the night was just an illusion. If he tried to break her door down and force his way in, the noise would attract attention. Besides, he wasn't sure that his working theory of the muggers being responsible for the innocent woman's disappearance was the truth. Mira was unpredictable, and she very well could have decided that she needed a drink or a thrall. It was possible that the woman's body was now at the bottom of the quarry pit, hidden amongst the garbage and ghoul corpses. It was possible, but he didn't find it convincing, and he still hadn't questioned his primary suspect yet. Jack approached the door slowly, taking light, silent steps. He didn't bother trying the handle, as he'd heard the lock click into place after the woman had closed it. Instead, he took a slow breath and focused his potential to cast Spectral Hand. It was different from how using his magic in a fight felt. He'd created his Spectral Sword spell in the fight against the ghouls. But this time, Jack was now conjuring a thin, pliable tool, a spectral lockpick, though calling it that minimized the elegance of what he was actually doing. Jack slid it into the lock like a shape-shifting finger, slowly probing until he had all of the tumblers in place. He turned the door's handle and smiled to himself as it opened. No shouts of alarm or angry questions came from within the residence. He waited for another few seconds and then slipped inside. Chapter 24. The shower was running, and the only illumination on in the house came from the sliver of light escaping from under the bathroom door. The interior was small, basically just a combination living room and dining room, with a few bedrooms attached to it. Jack moved slowly and silently, taking in the relevant details. The carpet was stained in places and had a strange smell. Several empty baggies were scattered across the living room table, along with a syringe and a few rubber bands. Apparently, the heroin epidemic had not spared Lustran Island's remote community. It fit with what he already suspected and made him fear for the life of the woman he'd saved the night before even more. He could picture a couple of junkies going to extreme measures rather than having to face up to what prison would mean for them and their addiction, especially ones who already had a proven penchant for violent crime. The shower turned off. Jack took silent steps across the floor, positioning himself directly to the side of the bathroom door. He waited, feeling a little unsure of how to approach what came next. The door opened, and the female mugger stepped out into the living room, wearing only a towel and humming a song to herself. She cleaned up surprisingly well. Her dark hair was short, a little longer than a pixie cut, and it left her neck completely visible. Jack could smell her, too, and it was a nice scent. Not as nice as Katie or Ryoko, but feminine, with an intriguing, peach-like edge to it. "Don't scream," he said in a quiet voice. The woman froze. To her credit, she didn't scream. Jack could read her body language. She was either about to attack him or about to grab a weapon. "It's not going to end well for you if you do anything stupid," he said. The words felt natural, and so did the role he'd fallen into. He was a predator, and she was his prey. He'd watched and waited and set a trap for her, all in a manner that would have been incomprehensible to him back before being given the embrace by Mira. He was a little unnerved by how easily he was able to roll with it.
Did Rufus send you?" asked the woman, her voice shaky. "I told him that I'd have his money by the end of the week. I still have a few days. I'll get it, I swear."
"Turn around," said Jack. The woman slowly turned around. She had a scar on her face, and there was a glassy dullness to her eyes that made her look almost like an old children's doll. "Do you recognize me?" he asked. The woman shook her head. He shouldn't have been surprised by that. It had been dark out, and she didn't have the same level of night vision that he did. "What happened to the woman?" asked Jack.
"I don't know what you're..."
"The woman from last night," said Jack. "The one that you tried to mug. The one that nobody has been able to find today." The female mugger took a step back, shaking her head.
"Nothing," she said. "We didn't do shit."
Jack took a step forward.
You should come clean, he said.
Or what? Said the woman, looking him up and down. I thought you were one of Rufus's guys, but instead, you're just some stupid little shit. I bet if I called the cops, you'd run away like a little bitch. You're the one breaking the law right now. She flashed a self-satisfied smirk and turned to walk away. Jack moved without thinking, grabbing her arm before she could reach for her phone. The action brought her close enough to him for him to get another whiff of her scent. She was clean, and she was young, and it made his bloodthirst surge.
Hey! Cried the woman. What are you?
What was he doing? His fingers traced along the nape of her neck. The woman's towel fell to the ground, exposing her nudity, but he wasn't interested in her like that. He did let himself plant a single kiss on her neck, but only to mark the perfect spot before sinking his fangs in. The woman shuddered, letting out a gasp that sounded more than a little orgasmic. Her blood was smooth and sweet, though it tasted a little dirty. It wasn't as clean and pure as Katie's blood, and yet still, it managed to instantly sate Jack's thirst, and he felt the same rush of intoxicating erotic desire. There was more to it than just that. The feeling, the thrill, was as much of control as it was of satiation and pleasure. It was the same thrill he'd felt when he fought and killed Bert and the ghouls. It was dark and seductive, like a call from the abyss. The woman pushed her naked butt against his crotch, moaning and shivering as he continued to drink her blood. Jack was just lucid enough to keep in control, to resist the feeling that called to him. He wasn't about to compound one rash decision with another, but if the circumstances had been only slightly different, he wasn't sure if he would have been able to resist. He was still drinking her blood. The woman's shivering was less pronounced now. He was still drinking her blood, and he needed to stop before he took too much. Jack forced his arms into motion, pushing the woman away from him as he pulled his mouth back. She fell onto the couch, and he licked the last few drops of her blood from his lips. That... The woman stared at him, her expression hazy, one hand rubbing against her crotch. That was incredible. Jack cleared his throat, feeling a little embarrassed now that it was over and done with. She was still naked, and the way she was looking at him made her seem like she was waiting for instruction. And that was exactly it, he realized. He just enthralled her with his bite. What's your name? He asked.
Gina, said the woman.
She looked hopeful. Out of all the possible reactions, Gina looked at him with hope in her eyes. It made Jack feel ashamed of himself, until he remembered the missing woman, and the fact that if he'd enthralled Gina a day earlier, she might still be alive. Gina, said Jack, did you kill the woman you tried to mug last night? Gina nodded. Jack took a slow breath. That woman's blood was as much on his hands as it was hers. He felt like a naive idiot. What had he been expecting would happen? Gina, I want you to go to the sheriff first thing in the morning, said Jack. Tell the sheriff what you did, confess your crime, go to prison, and behave when you get there.
Okay, she said. If you want me to, I will.
She looked so vulnerable sitting there, naked and complying to Jack's will. He felt conflicted, unsure of whether he was doing the right thing, even though it seemed to be leading to a just outcome. How do you feel right now, Gina? He asked. She frowned at him.
What do you mean?
Are you happy? He asked. Do you feel angry at me for what I've done to you?
I liked it, said Gina. I want you to do it again. It made me feel incredible.
She brought her hand up to one of her naked breasts and bit her lower lip. If anybody asked you about this, said Jack, about me biting you, what would you tell them?
I wouldn't tell them anything unless you told me I could, said Gina. Not even Johnny.
Johnny? Asked Jack. Is he your husband?
My boyfriend, said Gina. Though it's more like an open thing.
Was he the man who helped you with the mugging? He asked. Gina nodded.
He lives here, but we've been fighting a lot. He doesn't come home every night.
And he killed that innocent woman with you? Asked Jack.
Yes, said Gina, her voice emotionless. Johnny was the one who got rid of the body.
Jack had already suspected as much, but something about that detail didn't fit. Mira had bitten Johnny, meaning she'd enthralled him just as Jack had enthralled Gina. Why would she let him return to his normal life after that?
Will Johnny be back tomorrow? Asked Jack.
He said he'd sleep here tomorrow night, said Gina.
Good, said Jack. Don't report yourself to the sheriff until he gets back. I want you to call my cell phone when Johnny comes back, and then make an excuse and turn yourself in.
He spoke his number out loud to her until she could remember it, not wanting to write it down and leave any evidence of his presence.
All right, said Jack. Until you next see Johnny, just go about your normal life.
He frowned, glancing at the drug paraphernalia on the table again.
Okay, said Gina. Can you do the thing again? Before you leave? The way you kissed my neck?
She stood up and took a step toward him. She was still very naked, though her smell seemed more muted than it had before. Jack shook his head, feeling no impulse to drink her blood, now that his bloodthirst had been sated.
You can do other stuff, said the woman. Johnny's not here, and he won't care anyway. We have all night.
She pressed her body against his. Despite everything he knew about the woman, Jack felt a sudden temptation to throw her down on the dirty couch and ravish her. Katie had explained to him how feeding had an erotic component to it that was oftentimes hard to resist, and he could still feel the afterglow of it, like a half-finished sexual encounter.
No, said Jack. You should get into bed and go to sleep.
It didn't feel right. He'd enthralled the woman, and it felt too much like taking advantage of her, even if she did end up enjoying it. It was a path Jack wasn't interested in going down if he could help it. He watched Gina following his command and heading into her bedroom, and then slipped out through the front door.
Chapter 25.
The walk back to the mansion left Jack time to be alone with his thoughts, which forced him to think about what had just happened. He felt guilty, not because of what he'd done, but because of how easy it was to imagine himself doing it again. Katie had been against him feeding off innocence, and Gina, a serial mugger and accomplice to murder, was no innocent. Jack suspected that Katie wouldn't see the distinction if he admitted to what he'd done, which meant that he wouldn't be able to tell her, and that only fed into his sense of guilt. It had been so easy and natural. When Katie had let him bite her, it had been an experience of forced restraint. He'd felt like a dog carefully eating a scrap from a human's palm, trying to avoid nipping the hand underneath. Biting Gina had felt like fending for himself, finding food that was his by right, and feeling confident that he could do it again. He wouldn't let himself do it again. Would he? He couldn't decide if the question made sense to ask himself or not. He and Katie were still hunting Mira. It was possible that they'd find her and put an end to his curse before he needed to feed again. He wasn't supposed to fall into the rhythm of being a vampire. The lights were off in the foyer when Jack arrived back at the mansion, and as far as he could tell, Ryoko was asleep. It saved him from having to explain where he'd been, though he doubted that she would have asked, even if she'd caught him. He slipped into bed, and after a few minutes, he managed to fall into a deep, dreamless sleep. Ryoko and Katie were in the dining room when Jack made his way downstairs the next morning. Katie had on a white tank top, black yoga pants, and a gray zip-up sweatshirt. Ryoko was in her maid uniform as usual.
"You slept in late," said Katie. "It's almost 10."
Jack shrugged. "I guess I needed my rest." Katie whispered something to Ryoko, who bowed and immediately headed toward the kitchen.
"Let's talk in the lounge,"
said Katie, frowning at him. Jack resisted the urge to scowl and followed her into the next room.
I know that tone of voice, said Jack. You're annoyed at me.
It's my normal tone of voice, said Katie.
Exactly.
Katie set her hands on her hips and let her gaze meet his. She didn't say anything for a couple of seconds, almost like her goal was to force him into a guilty admission.
Ryoko said that you went out last night, said Katie.
I did, said Jack. I figured I might be able to track down Mira on my own.
He'd considered telling Katie the truth, or at least most of it, and then decided not to. She wouldn't be all right with him biting and enthralling someone, even if they were a mugger and a murderer. And if he told her the rest and omitted that one detail, she would have still had a chance at connecting the dots after hearing about the strange circumstances Gina would eventually be confessing to the sheriff under through her fiancé.
Are you fucking stupid? Snapped Katie. Did you not stop to consider why that might be a horrible idea? She's a powerful blood mage. She could have killed you outright or used any number of spells to do, well, essentially whatever she wanted.
Fair enough, said Jack, but it went okay. At least in the sense that nothing happened. I didn't encounter her.
I don't think you'd be here if you did, said Katie. She didn't say anything for another few seconds, and the weight of her suspicious gaze only grew harder to endure.
Why are you giving me that look?
He asked, shaking his head.
Because you're a vampire, said Katie, and I don't think you're getting the dangers and risks associated with, well, existing. The Order of Chaldea has an incredibly long reach, Jack. They could get tipped off to your presence, or hell, to Mira's presence, and come to the island.
You've mentioned the Order of Chaldea a few times now, said Jack. Mind explaining to me what it is exactly? Because I can only guess based off what you've told me.
Katie glanced back into the kitchen, making sure Ryoko was still occupied. The Order of Chaldea is an ancient organization dedicated to the research and control of magical forces, said Katie. It was born in the wake of the Chaldean dynasty, a line of ancient kings with the potential that briefly ruled over a small corner of Mesopotamia in 10th century B.C.
10th century B.C., said Jack. You're trying to tell me that this order is 3,000 years old?
Not exactly, said Katie. The order has fallen and been refounded several times over its history. The only things tying the current order back to ancient Chaldea are its philosophy and a few historical texts, but not many, along with a bunch of archaic spells recorded in stone tablets and artwork depicting demons being summoned from the other realms.
Okay. Jack scratched the back of his head. What are the other realms exactly?
If I keep giving you answers, you're just going to keep asking more fucking questions, said Katie with a sigh.
The other realms refer to the ethereal dimensions where magical essence and power come from and return to, and where most of the true demons come from, the ones that nightmares are made of, the ones that make vampires and ghouls look like annoying bugs.
The other realms, repeated Jack. Can people travel to them?
They can, said Katie. There are several spells that can open the required portal, but nobody who's ever gone through one has come back.
Wow, said Jack.
We're getting off topic, said Katie. My point is, the Order of Chaldea is kind of like the United Nations of the supernatural world, said Katie. It consists of wizards, witches, shapeshifters, summoners, illusionists, and, well, basically the whole spectrum of people with the potential who are willing to cooperate and organize with each other.
And they don't like vampires? Asked Jack.
There are some that they tolerate, said Katie. To keep the analogy going, if the Order of Chaldea is the UN, vampires are the terrorists.
I don't like this analogy, said Jack.
Then maybe you shouldn't have let your broodmother stick her fangs in your fucking neck, said Katie.
Jack sighed and rolled his eyes. Fine, he said.
What's your relation to the Order of Chaldea, then? Were you and my grandfather members? Katie frowned and glanced over her shoulder, looking a little upset at the mere mention of Peter. No, she said. I wasn't. I'm not a real mage, just a low-level alchemist.
Oh, right, said Jack. Because when I picture an alchemist, I think of crossbows and tight leather.
Enough with the jokes, Jack, said Katie. Your grandfather wasn't a member either, but not because he wasn't powerful enough. He had some ideological differences, but he still worked with them from time to time, hunting and identifying threats whenever they popped up.
So that's why you're concerned? He asked. You think I'm one of these threats now? And they'll come and arrest me if they hear that I'm up to no good?
They won't arrest you, Jack, said Katie. They'll kill you, and their standard for being a threat is basically not immediately surrendering in regard to vampires.
Wonderful.
Jack crossed his arms and leaned against the back of the couch. He wasn't surprised by what she was telling him. It had felt so simple and rewarding to bite Gina like he had. In fact, the only downside he'd seen in it last night was how easy and tempting it would have been to do again in the future. It made sense that the Order of Chaldea would have issues with vampires running around unchecked. Now, said Katie, are you ready to come clean with whatever you're keeping from me?
What?
Jack frowned and tried to meet her icy gaze.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You look good, Jack, said Katie.
Thanks, he said.
You look fed, she said in a harsher tone. It's been almost 2 days since I last let you drink my blood. You shouldn't look this healthy.
Jack furrowed his brow. And that's a bad thing?
He took a step closer to her, knowing that he needed a distraction.
I thought you didn't like it when I fed off you.
Katie's resolve didn't falter, though Jack saw a slight shiver run through her as he placed a hand on her shoulder. He leaned in a little closer, bringing his face in near enough to her neck for his breath to start tickling her skin.
I am a little thirsty right now, he said. Do you want me to bite you?
Katie hesitated for a second. I want you to tell me who else you've been feeding off of, she said.
Jack hated lying, but again, it was better than the truth. I finally gave in and bit Ryoko, he said. The tea put her into a deep sleep, and I was as gentle as I could be. She didn't wake up while I was doing it.
Katie blinked a few times in quick succession. She started to say something and then stopped. She looked conflicted, and it wasn't the reaction Jack had been expecting.
Oh, she said. Well, good. It makes sense for you to start feeding off Ryoko, given how she works here at the mansion and is around all the time, and
that's good. You didn't do anything weird to her at the same time, did you?
Like what? He asked.
You know what I mean, said Katie. Jack shook his head, resisting the urge to dig deeper into the slightly possessive tone of Katie's voice. A few silent, awkward seconds passed by. Jack had to avert his gaze from Katie's neck. The conversation was starting to trigger his thirst, but he knew that it would be exactly the wrong time to try to convince Katie to let him feed off her. And he would have to convince her next time. She wouldn't offer her neck to him again, not after the lie he'd just told. Jack wanted to kick himself for being so stupid and not having a better excuse ready. If he wanted to feed again in the near future, he'd either have to talk Katie into it or bite Ryoko while she was sleeping against her will. Or there was a third option. He'd enthrall Gina. It would be easy to show up at her house. He still planned to, anyway, to deal with Johnny and resolve the murder he'd inadvertently let happen. He could feed off Gina while he was there, and maybe even keep her around to feed off again in the future. And hell, the mansion had plenty of rooms. Would it be so weird for him to host a guest for a little while? Yes, he thought. It would be incredibly weird, and Katie would see right through it.
Jack?
Katie was frowning at him. She just said something, and he'd totally missed it.
Sorry, what?
He asked. What are your plans for today? Asked Katie. And for tonight, too. I want to keep tabs on where you are and what you're doing from now on. Jack scowled at her. His annoyance was directed at Katie, but also at Ryoko for consistently reporting his movements to Katie. Though given how much longer she'd known Katie for, he couldn't really blame her. "I have no plans," said Jack. "I'm still new to this island, remember? I don't even really know what there is to do."
"Somehow, I get the sense that you usually had no plans, even when you lived a normal life," said Katie.
"Hey," said Jack. "That's a low blow."
"Come by the gym around lunchtime," said Katie.
"You want me to attend one of your yoga classes?" he asked.
"I can't picture you doing yoga," said Katie.
"No, I just want to check up on you midway through the day. It's apparently necessary given how fucking mysterious your behavior has been recently."
Jack sighed and shrugged.
"Whatever," he said. "It's not like I have much better to do."
Katie kept looking at him with her intense gaze for another few seconds, then left without saying goodbye.
Chapter 26. Ryoko had set out a simple breakfast of toast, bacon, and eggs. Jack took his time eating, though given how muted the flavors were compared to the taste of blood, he chewed slowly out of necessity rather than choice.
"Sir?"
Ryoko appeared at the door that connected the kitchen to the dining room.
"Good morning, Ryoko," said Jack.
"Good morning," said Ryoko. "I was wondering if you had any plans for dinner tonight."
"Are you asking me on a date?"
He grinned, taking a certain amount of enjoyment in the way the question left her flustered.
"Oh, no, I'm so sorry, sir."
Ryoko brought her hand to her mouth and hurriedly gave him a deep bow.
"I just meant that it's a Friday night, and, well..."
Her face reddened as her explanation only served to dig her in deeper.
"I'm just teasing, Ryoko," said Jack. "I'm fine with anything. I'm heading to the gym for the afternoon, but I should be back by the evening."
He'd be back, and he'd be ready to finish taking care of Gina and her boyfriend, Johnny. He'd need to come up with a proper excuse to give Katie, in case she expected to spend the night hunting Mira.
"Okay," said Ryoko. "Thank you, Mr. Masterson."
Jack wasn't sure what she was thanking him for, but she bowed again and then hurried out of the dining room. He finished his food and returned to his room. He spent a couple unproductive hours playing a phone game and then got ready to head into town. Ryoko had packed gym clothes into a small duffel bag. Jack opted to change before he left so that he could jog down the slope rather than having to ask for a ride. It was bright outside, so bright, in fact, that Jack had to double back into the mansion to find a pair of sunglasses. He was becoming more and more aware of the way the sun affected him, immediately cutting him off from his blood magic and stunting his enhanced strength and speed. It wasn't as bad as the way vampires in folklore were described as reacting to the sun, but it still hampered him. He ran at a normal pace down the slope toward Lessertown, feeling a prickling sense of paranoia in wake of how vulnerable he was. The island was apparently hosting tourists for the weekend. A large cruise ship dwarfed Lessertown's small port, visible over the houses and buildings from a distance. The town hummed with activity, with gift stands set up and restaurants packed with customers. It felt strange to be a part of it, even on the outskirts. The mayor had described Lesterin Island to Jack as a waypoint, a place that people passed through, and Jack saw what he meant. He could tell the locals apart from the tourists at a glance, and the way they moved through the area with an air of exploration about them neatly showcased the mayor's point. He jogged past it all, heading for the Lesterin gym. It was a medium-sized building with long rectangular windows, through which pedestrians could experience a small guilt trip in watching the physically fit gym members exercising. Jack headed inside through the front door and waited at the front desk for the gym's manager to greet him. The cost of a day pass was a relatively small fee, and the manager waived it entirely when he mentioned Katie's name.
"Are you sure?" he asked.
"Positive," said the manager. "Katie's a gem. I'll leave it to her to convince you to sign up for a membership."
"Is she here right now?" asked Jack.
"Teaching a class in the group fitness room," said the manager.
Jack nodded and slowly made his way into the weight room. It was sunny outside, but he still wanted to spend some time getting an idea
of just how much stronger his improved physique had made him. Though admittedly, he was a little lost at where to begin amongst the weights and exercise machines. There were only half a dozen or so other people in the gym, and they all seemed to know exactly what they were doing. "Hi!" A dark-skinned woman with straight black hair, a pink tank top, and black boy shorts walked up to him. "Are you new to the island? Or the gym? Or both?" "Both." Jack smiled at her. "I'm Jack."
"Cinda,"
said the woman. "You wouldn't happen to be the same Jack that Katie was talking about, would you?"
"The one and only," he said.
Cinda laughed. She looked to be in her late 20s and had a lean body with just the right amount of curve left on it. Jack found himself liking her instantly, and it took him a second to realize why. She smelled amazing. A lot like the cherry trees outside the mansion, except with more depth and intrigue.
"I'm one of the personal trainers on staff," said Cinda. "I can show you how to use some of the equipment, if you're interested."
"I'm very interested," said Jack.
His bloodthirst was still sated from the night before, but having Cinda in close proximity to him stirred it back to life. Did she smell better than Katie? Maybe, though it was close. What did that say about what her blood would taste like?
"Jack?"
Cinda frowned at him.
"Hello? Are you home?"
"Sorry." He shook his head, feeling a wave of shame come over him at the direction his thoughts had been heading. "I'm not used to the, gym environment."
"Yeah, I kind of picked up on that."
Cinda flashed a somewhat condescending smile and gestured toward some weights.
"Why don't we start with something easy?"
She led him over to an empty weight bench and then looked him up and down.
"Since you're a fitness rookie, let's just start with you lifting the empty barbell to build good form," she said. "Lie down on the bench with your legs out to either side."
She walked Jack through a basic bench press, correcting his form and encouraging him. They were next to a window, and the direct sunlight sapped at his strength. When Cinda added a small amount of weight to each side, it was almost too much for him to handle.
"You'll have to build it from here," she said. "Don't be embarrassed. It takes time."
"Right," said Jack. A thick, rumbling black cloud slid in front of the sun, and just like that, he felt his vampiric strength seeping back into his muscles. He grinned, feeling as though he had no choice but to use it as an opportunity to test his limits. He stood up from the bench and started sliding more weight onto the bar in 45-pound increments.
"That's almost 400 pounds," said Cinda.
"I appreciate your enthusiasm, Jack, but I don't want to see you hurt yourself."
She tried to get in between him and the bench. Jack slipped by her, flashing a coy smile as he got back into position.
"Let's just see what happens," he said.
Chapter 27. He gripped the bar, lifted the weights up slightly into position, and then lowered it to start the bench press. He could feel the weight, but he could also feel his body, his muscles, and the supernatural advantage of his vampiric condition. He managed 10 reps in quick succession and could have done more, but he played it safe in case the sun came back out in the middle of his set.
"That was unbelievable," said Cinda. "You lied to me."
"Must be beginner's luck," said Jack, grinning at her.
She made a face and looked him up and down as though expecting to see 50 pounds of hidden muscle that she'd missed on first examination.
"You know, the way Katie talked about you made me expect some dopey little kid," said Cinda.
Jack winced. "What kind of things has she been saying about me?" he asked.
"No, I just mean, well, she mentioned how the two of you were together as kids," said Cinda. "She said that you made her promise to marry her when you both grew up."
"I didn't make her promise that," snapped Jack. "That was her idea."
Cinda laughed.
"You do get flustered pretty easily. She was telling the truth about that, at least."
He sighed and did another 10 reps. Cinda watched in fascination, and when he finished the set, he felt her hands settle on his shoulders.
"Your muscles must be sore after that," she said. "I give massages, you know. There's a private room with a massage table in the back, and my rates are pretty low."
"That was your plan from the beginning, wasn't it?"
Jack sat up on the bench and crossed his arms.
"You just wanted to sell me a massage."
Well, maybe, said Cinda, looking abashed. It's a small island, and I don't have many clients. A girl's gotta eat, you know.
And so do I, thought Jack. A massage, in a private room. A chance to be alone with a pretty girl with a fantastic smell and a beautiful neck.
Jack!
Katie's voice cut in before he could decide either way.
I thought I told you to check in with me when you got here.
Katie was watching him from the door that led to the yoga room with her hands set solidly on her hips. She was wearing workout clothing, tight black leggings, along with a white and pink top.
You were teaching when I got here, he said. Besides, your friend was here to help me out.
Cinda still had one hand on Jack's shoulder, and she only reluctantly seemed to pull it back. Katie looked more irritated than usual and shot an accusatory glare at her.
I was just showing him how to do a bench press, said Cinda, and seeing if he was maybe interested in getting a massage. Why do you look so mad?
Katie scowled and shook her head. I'm not mad at you. I'm mad at him.
I didn't do anything wrong, said Jack, and my muscles are feeling pretty sore. I think I'll take you up on that massage, Cinda.
No, he won't, snapped Katie. Cinda looked confused, and she started backing away from them slowly.
It's fine, she said. I have another client anyway. Why don't I give you two some space?
Katie seized Jack by the wrist before he could follow Cinda off toward the massage room. He felt his head clearing as Katie pulled him out of range of her scent, and then fogging up again as it was replaced by Katie's. She smelled sweet, like lemons, except mixed with a post-workout musky edge.
You're incorrigible, said Katie as they left the gym through the front entrance. The entire reason I wanted you to stop by was so I could make sure you weren't doing things like that.
Like what?
Like thinking about fucking biting someone, snapped Katie. One of my friends, no less.
You'd rather I bite you instead?
He'd meant the words in a teasing way, but as he spoke them, the idea instantly began to appeal to him. He had to take a slow breath to keep from fixating on Katie's neck. The gym, he decided, wasn't a good place for him to hang out. At least not on days when Cinda was around, trying to tempt him into buying a private massage.
I'd rather you not bite anyone, said Katie.
But, I mean, if it's between an innocent person and me, then yes, but only after I've taken the potion. We're walking a dangerous line, Jack.
Her words were surprisingly reasonable, but they weren't what Jack needed to hear at that moment. It made it so much harder for him to hold out. He didn't want to wait. He wanted to bite her right there and then, and drink as deeply as he could. Drink until the two of them were both writhing from the intensity of it.
I just need some space, he said. God, it's really hard to control myself sometimes. I think I should just head back to the mansion for now.
I think that would be for the best, said Katie. I have a couple's date night with Bruce and some of our friends tonight, but I should be able to get back to the mansion around midnight so we can hunt for Mira.
Right, he said.
She nodded to him and then headed back into the gym, watching at the door until he started walking in the direction of the mansion. It was a little annoying, but he understood her reasoning for being as suspicious as she was. And admittedly, hunting Mira had almost become a secondary concern for him. His desire to return to normal seemed less compelling than it had been in the beginning, though it was still on his mind. He needed to take care of Johnny and Gina first. Given that killing Mira was the only way to free himself of the curse, he'd also need time to train his abilities if he wanted to be a match for her in a fight. He took his time walking instead of jogging like he had on his way out. The tourists were still around, but Jack could tell that most of them were already starting to get a little tired of the island. He understood that feeling, a mixture of cabin fever and boredom. He also understood how much lay beyond a place like Lesteren Island, a place remote enough to be overlooked. It was late afternoon when he arrived back at the mansion. He took his shoes off in the foyer and started to head up to his room to change. He'd only made it to the stairs when he heard the sound of shattering glass, followed by a pained cry. Jack reacted instantly, surging through the lounge and dining room, and sliding as he came around the corner into the kitchen.
Ryoko was down on one knee, one hand clutched over her stomach, where red oozed out through the space in between her fingers. She'd been attacked. Was it Mira? Or was it Johnny and Gina, taking retaliation for his intrusion the night before? Ryoko! He started toward her side, but she held up a hand, urging him back.
I'm sorry, sir, she said. Please, don't come any closer.
It's okay, he said. Ryoko, I can...
Mr. Masterson, she snapped. There's still broken glass on the floor. Let me clean it up first.
Ryoko had let her hand fall away from what Jack had assumed was a stab wound. He could see now that the color wasn't right, or the smell, and one of the larger glass shards, amidst the mess on the ground, had a tomato sauce label stuck to it.
The cover was stuck, said Ryoko, glaring down at the unfortunate stain on her outfit. I tried running it under hot water, and it almost worked, but the jar slipped out of my hands.
Jack breathed a sigh of relief and started laughing. Ryoko blushed even harder and gave a deep, apologetic bow. It's okay, Ryoko, he said. I misread the situation. I'm just glad that you're okay.
I'm fine, sir, she said. And I have more tomato sauce, so the pizza should be too, for tonight.
He quirked an eyebrow at her. What's happening tonight? He asked.
I thought you knew from what you said this morning, said Ryoko. Peter always hosted a pizza and movie night for everyone in the mansion on Friday nights. Including the servants.
He did? The revelation didn't contradict anything Jack knew about his grandfather, but it did give the old man a new dimension. But you're the only servant still here now. Of course, Jack realized. Ryoko was the only servant working full-time at the mansion. She'd probably had a social life before, when Peter had more staff in residence. Friends, maybe even a boyfriend. Now, she just had her job, and a new boss to go with it. Pizza night sounds like a great idea, said Jack. Let's keep the tradition going, Ryoko. She bowed again, and Jack wasn't sure if it was out of appreciation or to hide the smile on her face. He grinned at her as she stood up straight again, and to his delight, her own enthusiasm won out over her guarded mannerisms. She had a beautiful smile. Chapter 28. Jack took a long, luxurious shower while the pizza was in the oven. His night was shaping up to be a busy one, but he still felt confident that he'd be able to cover his bases. He'd watch a movie and eat pizza with Ryoko, slip out to take care of Johnny after getting in touch with Gina, and be back in time to continue the search for Mira with Katie. He changed into slacks and a white t-shirt and headed downstairs to check on dinner's progress. Ryoko was in the middle of pulling the pizza out of the oven, and he was surprised to see that she'd also changed her clothing. She wasn't wearing her maid uniform anymore, but casual clothes for the first time Jack had seen since meeting her.
I hope you don't mind, sir, said Ryoko. The uniform I stained was my last clean one. It was so clumsy of me.
Ryoko had on a pair of black sweatpants and a gray sweater that fit her nicely. Jack gaped at her for a couple of seconds, feeling like he was looking at a different person. She looked so normal, even down to her flower-patterned pink socks. She looked like a girl getting ready to spend a cozy Friday night watching movies on the couch, rather than a practiced and disciplined maid.
Sir?
Prompted Ryoko. Sorry, said Jack. It's fine, Ryoko. You look really cute.
Thank you, sir, said Ryoko.
Can you please make a serious attempt at calling me Jack, just for tonight? He asked. If it's pizza and movie night, I want you to be able to relax.
I can try.
An unsure smile played across Ryoko's lips.
Jack, the pizza just needs to cool, and then we can eat. Do you want to pick out a movie for us?
Sure, he said. Any preference on your end? She shrugged.
I like scary movies, said Ryoko.
Jack chuckled and headed into the lounge to pick something out. His grandfather had a Netflix account, and it only took him a few minutes to find a zombie movie that fit the bill. He felt a little strange reading the description and comparing the details to his own experiences with the real supernatural world. He left the movie paused in the opening sequence until Ryoko came out with a pizza. She sat down on the couch next to him, and after they'd both taken a slice, he started the movie. The vibe in the room was different from anything Jack had experienced before with her, or really with anyone. The movie was the focus for both of them, but he found Ryoko's presence to be distracting and far more compelling than the cookie-cutter horror movie plotline. They both shifted on the couch as they finished eating, moving closer to each other through some unspoken mutual agreement, until their shoulders were in direct contact. Jack could feel Ryoko reacting to the movie, tensing up during the scary scenes, occasionally gasping at jump scares. She smelled fantastic, but feeding was the furthest thing from his mind as he sat next to her on the couch. He felt a sudden appreciation for Ryoko, for everything she'd done for him in his short time back at the mansion. She was the unsung heroine of the past few days of his life, and maybe that was why Jack felt so reluctant to take Katie's suggestion about drinking her blood. Jack put his arm around her, feeling like it was the most natural thing in the world. Ryoko immediately rested her head against his shoulder. Were her thoughts moving in the same direction as his? Was she happy to have him in her life too?
"This is nice," whispered Ryoko.
"Yeah," said Jack. They were silent for several minutes after, neither of them needing to say anything. It was a different kind of rapport from the aggressive, argumentative banter he usually shared with Katie. He could relax around Ryoko, and he hoped the same was true in return.
"I was a little worried," whispered Ryoko. "When Katie first told me you'd be coming to stay at the mansion in Peter's place, it just seemed so sudden."
"It was sudden for me, too," said Jack. "I never expected to end up staying for this long."
"I thought that it might be weird without the other servants and just the two of us in the mansion," said Ryoko.
"Is it weird?" asked Jack. She lifted her head up, and he turned his face to meet hers. "Was it weird? On the surface, it felt like it should be. Ryoko confined to her role as a perfect maid, Jack still getting used to the authority he had over her and the needs of his vampiric condition."
"No," whispered Ryoko. "It's nice, not weird."
She nestled her head against his shoulder again, and Jack squeezed her a little tighter against him. "Nice," he echoed in his thoughts. "Not weird." Ryoko got up midway through the movie, excusing herself to brew a kettle of tea. She offered some to Jack when she came back, and he politely refused. He felt his temptation knocking at the door as she drank the tea, laced with guilt over the fact that Katie had drugged it. She'd probably been thinking of situations just like this when she'd made that decision. He and Ryoko, alone in the lounge, watching a movie. If not for having fed off Gina the night before, Jack wasn't sure he would have had the willpower to stop himself. Ryoko's breathing slowed, and after a couple of minutes, she fell asleep, her head still resting against his shoulder. Jack carefully repositioned her on the couch and grabbed a blanket from one of the guest rooms to lay across her. He turned the movie off and headed up to his room to prepare for what came next. Gina's text couldn't have come at a more perfect time. He was in the middle of donning his grandfather's duster when his phone vibrated to life, alerting him of a new message. "Gina. Johnny just got back, if you still want to confront him." Confront him. Was that what Jack was heading out into the night to do? He could already feel a tension in his body, and it wasn't just from his guilt over letting the muggers go in the first place. He could feel a dark temptation, a pull from the sinister part of him that had come to life since he'd first been turned into a vampire. Oh, he would confront Johnny all right. "Jack, I'll be there in 10 minutes. Wait outside for me. Make sure Johnny doesn't leave." He left through the mansion's front door as quietly as he could and started down the road. His strides lengthened as the darkness welcomed him, and the back of his duster trailed behind him like a dark, ominous cape. Jack stayed out of sight as he entered Lessertown and headed for Gina's house. He didn't have any pressing reason to, but it felt natural and right. It was easy to travel through the alleyways, and his vampiric physical conditioning let him jump high enough to pull himself onto the roofs of single-story buildings when he needed to take a more discreet route. Gina was waiting outside just as instructed. She didn't react as Jack slipped out from a nearby building and silently approached her. It wasn't until he tapped her on the shoulder that she seemed to realize that he was there.
Oh,